Matthew's gospel, the last words we have recorded from Jesus are what we often call the Great Commission. We've kind of given a title to a couple different passages in the Bible, and this is one of those passages. Matthew 28, 18 through 20 says, "Then Jesus came to them and said, 'All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I'm with you always to the very end of the age.'" Let's go and write this down. As Christians, we are expected to actively go and make disciples. To go and make disciples. Now, I've stressed, I've preached, I've talked about, I've talked about it individually, I've talked about in small groups, I've talked about here in church, the emphasis on that one little word, go. We're not emphasizing that in this 9 weeks. I'm focusing more on the next part of that, and that is the make part. So hopefully you guys will be able to combine this with a lot of the other messages that have been shared about going, about being active and going. Go and make disciples. And Jesus says, you know, I want you to go and make disciples. A lot of times we baptize someone and then we try and make a disciple out of them. And I think there's a specific order here that Jesus goes through. He says, go and make disciples. And then what do you do with these disciples once you make them? You baptize them. You teach them to obey everything that I've commanded you. And so as Christians, we are to make disciples. A disciple is someone who embraces and spreads the teachings of the person they follow. So we as Christians, we are to go and make disciples, which are people who embrace and spread the teachings of Jesus. That's what we are to go and make. I want to see our church more active in making disciples. I want to believe that you would like to be more active in making disciples. And I believe that we have some resources already in place that can be better focused for the purpose of making disciples. So if you want to put your bulletins aside just for a moment, that way you're not distracted trying to figure out where am I supposed to be filling in bulletin points. We'll have some notes up on the screen in a little bit, but take a pause with me for a moment. I want you to think about some of these resources that I want to share with you. We already have some things in place here, some disciple-making resources, tools at our disposal. For instance, and you guys can see this from this angle. Is that good? Okay. We have Sunday school. It'd be bad if I couldn't spell Sunday school. Because it has the word school in it. That would be ironic. So we have Sunday school. And in our Sunday schools, we have the members of the Sunday school classes, and they work together to embrace and spread the teachings and lifestyle of Jesus. That would be making disciples, or at least that would be disciples gathering together to encourage each other. So how do they do this in Sunday school? Well, they do it through Bible study. That's kind of a key part. That's kind of a key part of our Sunday schools. That's kind of the main emphasis is Bible study. To get in there and dig in and to discuss it and to be able to have a more detailed view and to go through. I know the one down here, down the hall, they go very detailed through. And sometimes you'll only get through like a half a verse or a couple of words on a Sunday morning. And so they do Bible study. But something else happens in Sunday school. It's not just all straight Bible study. The Sunday schools that we have, they will spend, you know, some of them 10, 15 minutes, some of them most of the class time, talking about prayer requests and sharing life stories. And life stories, not just to talk, to hear themselves talk, but sharing in a way to be lifted up and encouraged and supported by other Christian brothers and sisters. And there's a word for that, and that's fellowship. So Sunday school will use Bible study and fellowship. They will pray for each other, visit each other in the hospital. Which was encouraging. You know, we had a handful of people from our small group there in the hospital last night until 2 a.m. plus, and because we love them, because they're part of our small group. They'll celebrate birthdays together, and this continues this working together to embrace and spread the teachings and lifestyle of Jesus. Some Sunday schools are involved in, I was talking about our small group, I'm talking about Sunday schools. My bad. I'll be talking about small groups in a minute. So some Sunday schools are involved in service projects, and they serve together. And so that would be down here, service. And some Sunday schools, it's a part of them. I'd like to see our Sunday schools as a whole pick up some service projects and run with it. Say, hey, we'll take this and we will run with it. I think it'd be awesome. And I think that'd be one area where we could kind of make our Sunday schools a little more discipleship oriented to take the Bible study that's already happening, the fellowship that's already happening, add in a little more service, and do that with a very strong focus towards we are doing this to make disciples. We are wanting to do what Jesus asked us to do and make disciples. So we've got one resource there, one tool. Another tool we have, and that's one that I just accidentally spilled the beans on, small groups. We have a few small groups going on in our church. Yeah, I'll bullet those. That might be easier. And small groups, they tend to focus not so much on Bible study, although there is Bible study involved. Their high area is fellowship, typically in a small group, to get to know each other, to do life together, to spend time together, to share with each other, to help each other, to walk through each other. And we've got a handful of stories from our small group that go with that, and some of our other small groups that are here, you know, represented right there in the corner, that are even kind of sitting there together right there in their little area. Patty would be joining them, but yeah, right there in that little quarter of the room is another one of our small groups. And so there's fellowship. That's a big part, but also they have Bible study. So they have another, you know, element there that's part of the same thing as Sunday schools, where they study together. I know that the Ryan and Heather's small group, is that fair to say that? Or, you know, Larry and Patty's small group, or I think they meet at Ryan and Heather's house. So that's, oh, they meet at Patty's house. Okay, so Patty and Larry's small group now. Sorry, you guys get demoted. So anyway, so that small group, they're just finishing up. They've got one more study left in their How to Not Be a Pharisee study, which I'm sure has a lot more politically correct name than that. But that's the idea of what they've been going through. So they've got the fellowship side of things. They've got the study. Our small group, which is very fellowship heavy, since we have typically a lot of couples in our small group, we will have a Bible study separate but with the same group. And we'll do kind of our Bible study on Friday nights and do a few months there and then kind of take a pause from it and then jump back into it for a few months. And we'll do, typically we've done studies on marriage and family and different things there. So we've got Bible study involved in that. And the small groups are involved in service also. We see that pop up in small groups, to use their small group as an example. Everyone in their small group is intimately involved in our dinner theater ministry and our dinner theater outreach. And they are the ones that meet in August for a dinner theater that happens in March, and they are looking at scripts and running through things, and they're planning out things and looking at a theme, and then they'll start to involve a wider circle of people to get involved with decorations and all the different, and then the actors and actresses start getting involved, and a lot of them have been and are some of our actors and actresses and director and building the set and all sorts of stuff there. So they serve together as a group, and our small group has done some very similar things as far as serving together. And so we see these elements also in small groups. We have another resource, and that is ministry teams. And so where Sunday school, they have all three, their focus is more on, you know, their primary is Bible study. Small groups, the primary kind of focus is more on fellowship, although they have the other parts as well. Ministry teams, their primary starts in service. And they will serve. You know, the praise team up here, they get together and they work together to serve, to be a ministry team. And they do different things for all around the church. The greeters, they serve. The people at the coffee bar, they serve. And so we've got just a number of different ministry teams. But not only do they serve together, inevitably, when you serve side by side with someone, you're going to have fellowship. You're going to get to know them better. You're going to talk. You're going to chat. You're going to hear about each other's lives. You're going to, and it might not be as formal as a prayer request section in the Sunday school. And it might not be as purposeful as the small groups, where that is a big part of getting together in small group. But you're going to serve together, and you're going to end up spending some time sharing together. And I think it would be really, really awesome if those groups could bring in a little bit of Bible study, a little bit of devotional type thoughts. I mean, think about the worship team as their last month was about hope, right? Correct? June was about hope. Okay, the worship teams, they get together and they plan out a month's worth of music and the services and how that's going to go. They do that in May. So if in May they knew it was going to be about hope, and say Logan or someone from the worship team planned just a little devotion about hope before they went to plan all of those messages, then they could incorporate some Bible study in that to help focus, to help get some more purpose involved in that. I was thinking, I should have mentioned it first service because that's where the team is that sets up the tent for the car show coming up, you know, the big tent that we have. We've got a team of guys mostly from the first service that set that tent up. And how cool would it be to do just a little devotion when they come together to get the tent set up, maybe on how the tabernacle was carried to and from places in Numbers and different things there, or different, all sorts of different things. You could talk about the tent of meeting, you know, where Moses went. Get creative, but there are all sorts of different ways where we could bring just a little bit of Bible study into some of our groups that serve together, our ministry teams, the greeters. You know, if they would get together, if they'd come and meet a little bit early on a Sunday morning, and if they would all get together somewhere before they went to their separate doors, and maybe just shared a verse, an inspirational verse about hospitality, about caring, loving. You know, maybe that verse from Hebrews about how some have entertained angels without even knowing it. And so we can incorporate that. So when we look at these groups here, when we look at Sunday school, when we look at small groups, when we look at ministry teams, we have tools, we have resources right here that are already in place, that are already working, that are already functioning, that if we can kind of focus them a little more, these can be discipleship-making teams. These can be teams that are purposefully made to make disciples. And then when you invite someone in, when you have someone that's new to the church, you say, hey, you know what? Why don't you come and greet with me for a few Sundays? Then instead of just greeting and getting the fellowship, they would also be getting a little bit of Bible study. And the purpose of that in your mind and in the greeters' minds, the other people in that ministry, is we are making disciples. And we're going to baptize this guy someday, and we're going to continue to teach him to obey all the things, you know, or your small group. Maybe you've got an opportunity where you've got, you know, like a Frogmore Stew night or whatever, you know, with our fun fourth that we shared in our small group. You know, we've got someone that's new to the church, and we invite them into to an activity like that and say, hey, we're having this with our small group. Would you like to come and be a part of it? In our minds, it's not just fellowship, it's discipleship. We're bringing them in for the fellowship, but hopefully we can get them into some of the Bible studies that we're doing. Hopefully we can get them in to serve with us and deepen their understanding, deepen their relationship, deepen their involvement in church. Or if it's Sunday schools, we get people involved and we invite them to Sunday school. Sometimes that's an easy thing to invite someone that started to make a habit of coming to church. Say, hey, we've got a Sunday school happening at 9:30. Would you like to come and join us? And they come into Sunday school and they join you. And instead of just the Bible study, you're thinking, okay, we need Bible study, we need fellowship, we need to get them out somewhere with us as a group serving, because that builds the heart. You know, we're going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. And so let's go and pull our bulletins back out. So we've got all of these, and we've got the right tools, but to help us to be more intentional in the disciple-making process, I'd like for us to consider tying them together with a common term. And that term is discipleship teams. Just simply describing, defining what these teams do. Nothing new. They already exist. They already function. We're not adding discipleship teams with the small correction that, yes, we'd love to add and introduce and birth some new Sunday schools, birth some new small groups, birth some new ministry teams, but still the concept is not going to be anything new. We're just focusing it more and giving it more purpose and more drive and more desire and more reason to bring people into your group instead of it just being your group and you're growing on your own and taking this thing that Jesus shared very seriously and saying, go and make disciples. And in the go part, that's where you're bringing people in. So we've got discipleship teams. Let's go and write these down because we've got these. We've got Sunday schools, and so we've got our logo here. And so we've got Sunday schools, we've got small groups, and we've got ministry teams. I'll let you guys go and write that down, give you a moment. We're going to be spending the next 9 weeks, and it sounds like a big, long series, but I'll kind of break this down for you a little bit. And I'll wait till I'll get our vision statement up there, and then I'll break it down for you. So, or no, I won't need our, yes, I will. We've got two things to get before I can break that down for you and show you my little crazy squares. So let's look at a definition. You guys got all that? Those three? Okay. Definition of the MCC of an MCC discipleship team. So if it's a Sunday school, if it's a small group, it's a ministry team, they would all fall underneath this definition. It's an MCC group who joins together in a cooperative effort to embrace and spread the teachings and lifestyle of Jesus. Second half of that is what we understand as a disciple, to make disciples. The first part of that is talking about teamwork, working as a team. So it's an MCC group who joins together in a cooperative effort to embrace and spread the teachings and lifestyle of Jesus through these three things that we just listed up here on the board. Through Bible study, through fellowship, and through service. I'll give you a moment to write that down. Through Bible study, and through fellowship, and through service. And this definition very easily describes our Sunday schools, our small groups, our ministry groups. And there might be some ministry groups where there's not any Bible study happening, but if you add a devotion in, this definition could definitely follow it. If we've got some Sunday schools that are involved in fellowship and Bible study and they're not serving, throw in a service project. Get involved in something. Some of the things that my vision for some of this is that I would love when we've got a sign up in the foyer for, hey, we've got this project going on, we need people to sign up. I would love it to see a whole Sunday school class just go out there and say, the Koinonia class, or the Chosen Ones, or whatever new Sunday school we've got. And just boom, automatically, wham, you've got 20 volunteers jumping in and helping that. And then even further down, I'll cast this way out there. So I have to be careful with my visioning, because sometimes I cast out too far and I lose people. But let me go there, and then I'll bring us back to present day. To even be able to say, hey, we've got a cool idea. What small group, what Sunday school, what ministry team wants to take this and run with it and make it happen? That would be awesome, you know, to have some, or even to have it backwards, to have that group come up with an idea and bring it to the, you know, the staff and the elders, say, hey, we'd like to do this. What do you think about this? And we say, awesome. Are you guys going to head it up? Well, of course we are. That's why we brought it to you. We want to do this. And that would be awesome. I'd love to see that. And in the process of that, gaining more focus, moving forward, and trying to bring people along with you in this idea of making disciples while we're moving and growing. So that's the idea of an MCC discipleship team. And then so you got the complex definition. Here's the short, simple definition of that. I'm just going to read it to you. An MCC group who works together to follow Jesus. That's what the complicated version really says. So let's connect this to our vision. And I'll talk you through our next 9 weeks here after we get to our vision. So our vision statement is going to have some holes in it. I need you guys to help me out with this. So being a church visibly connected to the heart of Christ by actively bringing hope to the community through serving, transforming, and reproducing others to the same heart and actions. That last third is what we're going to be spending our time on. Now, I can draw this now that I've got a board up here. I don't know if you guys can see it if I draw it down here. Can you see down here? No? Yes? I heard yeses and nos. Better? Okay. This is, I don't even know why I'm trying to explain it. So we've got these three things. So we've got Bible study. Okay, yeah, I can't abbreviate it that way. Just sorry, I didn't see that until I just saw it. That just felt disrespectful, so I can do the other ones that way. So Bible study, fellowship, and service. Probably should have written those in a different order. And so then we've got these three things here in our vision statement that we're wanting to cover. Serving, transforming, and reproducing. And so we look at those across here. So serving, transforming, and reproducing. So we want to look at each of these, and we're going to look at under serving for 3 weeks. How does serving and service go together? Well, duh. That's today, so that's we're going to keep it simple since we've got all this introductory material. So serving and service, serving and fellowship, how does that work together? When you serve together, what does that do for fellowship? What does your Bible study do for serving, and how should those two be related? That'll be for 3 weeks. In the next 3 weeks, we're going to talk about what? Yes, transforming. And then how do we transform by serving together? What does that do to transform people? How does that make disciples? You see where I'm going with the make disciples thing? How does that make disciples? How do we, when we transform, how do we transform through fellowshipping and hanging out together? How do we transform through Bible study? And so we're going to be looking at those for 3 weeks. And then next 3 weeks, we're talking about reproducing. How do we reproduce through Bible study? When we're studying the Bible, how is that going to purposefully be done to reproduce more disciples, Christians, more people following Jesus? Fellowship. What is fellowship? What's the role in fellowship in reproducing new Christians, new disciples? What's the role of service and serving together? How does that help us to make and reproduce more disciples who have the same heart and actions of being visibly connected to the heart of Christ through actively bringing hope to the community? And that just keeps repeating itself and keeps going around and around and around. So do you see the big picture here? So today we're talking about service. I'm going to bring this back up. And today is the duh week. And it's just that service should result, or service should result in serving. So we're down here in that, down there. Play a little tic-tac-toe later. So Philippians chapter 2 is where we're going to be, and that's kind of our main passage today for our last 10 minutes here. Starts off in verse 1. Paul says, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from his love, if any fellowship with the Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and purpose. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. Your attitude should be the same as that of Christ Jesus, who being in the very nature of God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. So I'm just going to write this down, and the next one will have the title, but I want the next slide also. Patty, thank you. Serving, the anti-entitlement attitude. Serving, the anti-entitlement attitude. We've got a dangerous attitude that has crept its way into America, into our churches, into our families, and it is an attitude of entitlement, and serving is the anti-attitude of entitlement, the anti-entitlement attitude. We should serve because serving imitates the attitude of Jesus. We just read this in Philippians chapter 2. Jesus was God. He was God made into the flesh. Emmanuel, it means God with us. Yet we're told here in Philippians chapter 2 that Jesus didn't hang on to that title while he was here on earth. Instead, he made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. He humbled himself, and he was obedient even to death on a cross. The physical act of serving imitates this attitude that Jesus had. So when we serve, we are imitating that attitude. Going back up to verse 3, he says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. So serving can help with that. Serving helps keep selfish ambition and vain conceit at bay. It helps keep it under control in a place where it needs to be, not out running crazy. Jesus' servant attitude is seen through the way that he treated people during his time on earth. The way, the miracles, the healings, the tenderness, the compassion, the way he treated people, his teachings, even his discussions. And the servant attitude, it crescendos at the cross. In Philippians chapter 2 here, this little section that's kind of notched out, if you have a Bible that kind of does that for you, and up on the screen I kind of had it a little bit more in the poetic form. And there's, in the Greek side of things, that little section is not consistent with other places in Philippians. And it's understood that Paul was quoting a hymn that someone else had written. It's not Old Testament scripture. It's more than likely a poem or song, probably a hymn, that Paul is quoting in Philippians chapter 2. And in that hymn, we see that this servant attitude of Jesus, it's shown up in two different ways. It shows up, it was displayed by his humility, and it was displayed by his obedience to God. What room is there for selfish ambition when you are humbly obeying God? There's no room for it. Where does vain conceit have room to get a foothold in your life when you are humbly serving God? See, serving helps keep selfish ambition and vain conceit at bay. It imitates the attitude that Jesus had, and it was an attitude of humility and an attitude of obedience. You know, there's nothing wrong with doing something for yourself. This verse, this passage, it actually speaks a little stronger in verse 4 towards this idea. But it's not a self-neglect passage. It's not saying let yourself go. It's not saying do away with yourself. Selfish ambition isn't doing something for yourself every once in a while or taking care of yourself. Selfish ambition is where your sole drive is to achieve something for yourself. That's selfish ambition. When your end game is based on what you get out of it. I've witnessed on a number of occasions people who pursue personal agendas while acting like they're serving God. They have the appearance of humble obedience. But what they are really driven by is selfish ambition. What are they seeking to gain? Maybe it's a power play. Maybe they're trying to gain some power. Maybe for others, it's an attaboy. They're wanting some credit. They're wanting the spotlight. True Christ-like service is not done with selfish ambition. It's void of it. It is the anti-entitlement attitude, service. We should do nothing out of selfish ambition, nor should we do anything out of vain conceit. That is an empty, inflated view of yourself. I deserve this because I'm special, or I did this, or I did that. I should be treated this way because... And once again, I've witnessed this on a number of different occasions where someone who is serving God, and it turns out that they feel like something is owed to them because they've served God, because they've done something. We don't serve for selfish ambition or vain conceit. Verse 3, going back up to verse 3 in Philippians 2, he says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourselves. So instead of operating out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, we should act humbly, considering others better than yourselves. So serving develops humility. Serving develops humility. You guys get that down. Recorded in the Gospels, and I believe Matthew, I'm for sure in Luke, and also in Mark. Mark's where I'm going to be quoting from. Mark 10:45, it says, for even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. So the hymn that Paul quotes in Philippians connects Jesus' servant heart, his service, his act of service, to the cross. Even death on a cross is what that hymn says in Philippians 2. Here in Mark 10, Mark is saying, Jesus' servant heart, that he came not to be served but to serve, is connected directly to the cross, to that act of sacrifice. Humility is directly connected to the cross. Humility is a prerequisite of the selfish or selfless. Humility is a prerequisite of the selfless sacrifices that we are asked to make as servants. You can't make those sacrifices without humility. It doesn't work out that way. Serving helps to develop this attitude of humility. If you've already got it, good. Then you won't mind serving. If you already have it, and you say you don't need to serve because you already have it, then you probably don't already have it, because you'd be willing to serve. Verse 4, reviewing that one, it says, Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. And once again, kind of going back to that, this isn't a verse that talks about complete neglect. He's not saying get rid of all of your own interests. He says don't look only to those, inferring that, yeah, you need to take care of some things for yourself. You need to take care of yourself in order to be good enough to take care of someone else. But don't just look to those things. Don't only do that. That's when it turns bad. That's when it turns unhealthy, when you look only to your own interests and you ignore the interests of others. He says, don't look just to those. Also look to the interests of others. See, serving keeps me aware that there is more to this world than just me and my interests. The world does not revolve around you. And serving reminds us of that truth. When we serve, we are reminded it's not just about me. I have my own interests, and there's nothing wrong with some of those. But if that's all that my world revolves around, that's very bad. That's very unhealthy. Don't only look to your own, but also look at the interests of others. And service helps keep us focused on that when we serve. It keeps us from being focused on ourselves. In the upper room, during the Last Supper, Jesus gets up from the meal and he takes off his outer clothing and he wraps around him as a towel. He takes off his outer clothing and he gets a towel and wraps around his waist. Jesus takes on the appearance of a servant. This is what the house servant would have looked like, the servant of the house. No fancy outer garment and just a towel wrapped around his waist. He gets up from this amazing meal, a meal that we're going to celebrate and share in here in a few minutes. He gets up from this meal and takes on the appearance, the physical appearance of a servant. And then he acts like a servant. He pours water into a bowl and he goes around and he washes the disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was around his waist. During this time, he has this interaction with Peter, and you guys can go and read that in John chapter 13. But this whole episode, if you just imagine the feeling of Jesus, the Lord of Lords, the King of Kings, he doesn't only do the act of a servant, he takes on the appearance of a servant. And this goes hand in hand with what we're reading in Philippians chapter 2. He didn't consider equality with God something to be grasped, but instead he took on the nature of a servant. The appearance of a servant, the actions of a servant. It says in verse 12, when he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and he returned to his place. And I can only imagine the silence that followed the conversation that he had with Peter during the foot washing of Jesus actually doing this. I don't think we can really understand what this would be like in their class system and the way that would have been just such a step down, so far down from where Jesus should have been and where these guys who knew who he was and what he was capable of, and here he is washing their feet. And Jesus breaks the silence by asking a question. Do you understand what I have done for you? Do you understand what I have done for you? There was purpose in this. There was meaning. There was intent. There was a reason. Do you understand what I've done for you? He asked them, you call me teacher and Lord, and rightfully so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. What has Jesus done for you? And he's asking us the same question. Do you understand what I've done? Good. Then go and do what I did. Go and serve the way I served you. Go and love the way I loved you. Go and make disciples the way I made disciples. Let's go and write this down, our final notes here this morning. Jesus set the example of a servant and commanded us to do as I have done for you. Being a servant, it helps us to imitate Jesus' attitude. It imitates Jesus' actions when we get that attitude. It's the anti-entitlement attitude. It's an attitude of humility and obedience. And it, not only does it help us to imitate him, but it is something that he exemplified for us and commanded us to do. You see what I've done for you? Now you go and do it. Go and be a servant.